you'll see their pupils get like sort of constrict and dilate, and mm-hmm. it kind of flashes at you.
Okay.
And you know that's a really heightened state.
Yeah, right.
And if a bird's doing that at you. Yeah.
Welcome to the Big Small Podcast. I'm your host, Jaden Lunt, and in today's episode, I speak to a wildlife and exotics veterinary nurse. We speak about the impact of nature knowledge on her personal life. We speak about parrots and how ibis are able to eat toads and not die from their toxins. Please welcome to the podcast my guest, Sampi J. Welcome, Sampi.
Thanks, Jaden.
To the podcast. How are you going today?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Today I'm doing, it's been good, apart from traffic, as we talked about. That was the worst part of the day, but snakes were good. They didn't bite me, so it's always...
That's always
plus.
A plus.
Although
their bite marks do look pretty cool.
They do look cool. Yeah. It's a good spot to start off when you're having conversations at bars, if I was to ever go to a bar, which I don't. So, anyway.
You don't go to bars?
No, that's a... No, I don't. I'm not going
to... It's a grown-up venture.
Yeah, it's just so expensive. It's so expensive to buy drinks. But anyway. Last time we were talking, we spoke about your profession as a vet nurse at a wildlife hospital.
Yes.
For anyone that may have not, as for the listener, has not yet heard that one, can you give us a breakdown of what your job title entitles for you?
Sure. So I'm a wildlife vet nurse. I call myself a wildlife and exotics vet nurse because we also deal with domestic birds, companion birds, and mm-hmm. domestic reptiles mm-hmm. as well. That's my job title.
That's your job title.
And I work at a wildlife hospital.
Mm-hmm. And you've been doing that since 2014?
So I started in 2014, did it for about 3.5 years, and then left the industry. Yeah, took a time out,
mm-hmm.
For about 5 years, and have only just recently returned in the last,
eight months
mm. or so, September last year. Yep. So, some things have kind of changed, and I'm kind of playing catch up with a few things.
I think
we mentioned the greater gliders.
Yes.
Last time.
Bloke,
and
he had down a shirt.
And I'd only just realized there's a few things that have changed in the industry field since then. Since I left, and I've only just recently discovered in the last couple of days that greater gliders have actually been split into three different
categories,
subspecies. So. That was in 2020.
Do you know what those names were?
No, look, my Latin's a little rusty.
It's Latin. I honestly, one of the guys that I've worked for, he is fantastic with Latin names, and it's an honest just bamboozlement of myself. I don't know how. Like, look, common names I'm working on. All right, I'm getting better. Latin names, I mean, I know Porphyriarchus is a scientific name, but I actually have no idea what species it is for.
I've only recently learned the Latin name for the taipan.
Oh, yes. Which is
hoping you could...
Oxyranus?
Uranus?
Yeah, Oxyranus. I don't know if Scutellatus is the other part of it, but... Is it?
I think so.
Oh, so you kind of like...
I remember reading it. I can read a lot of words, but not necessarily pronounce.
Okay.
Have the pronunciation.
Right.
So I just, I'm an adult.
Right. Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. Well, I've, because, scientific names are definitely very challenging for me. But I'm working on my collection, because it's way better to have, if you can have a conversation with scientific names, when you understand it, it does help with breaking down the subspecies
Definitely.
Of different animals, because greater glider, as you said, in 2020, it's been split into three subspecies of greater glider. So now you've got to understand the subparts of that.
Same with the red-tailed black cockatoos.
Mm-hmm.
There's
what, they split down to that?
Well, a lot of people think that the red-tailed... Well, I say a lot of people, probably outside of the industry or that have anything to do with them, probably think that the red-tailed black cockatoos are just the one species. There's actually five subspecies.
Of red-tailed black cockatoos.
No way. And again, in 2020. I think it's 2020. I think it's 2020. Okay. I could be getting the year wrong. So they were doing genome testing, and they actually discovered that. Okay, so I may have some of these facts slightly
skewed,
but generalized. The species that was across the Northern Territory and Queensland were previously considered two separate species, but with the genome testing, they found that there wasn't that much genetic differences.
Right.
So they combined that that species, but they did find with the southern species that there was, in one of them, there was enough of a genetic difference to split that. So they combined two of them and then split two of them. So we still have five.
Right.
But there are five different subspecies of red-tailed black cockatoos. And like physical size of the cockatoos, the size and shape of the bill. Like there's all these very, very slight variances. And the southern species are a little bit more on the threatened, vulnerable sort of side.
Right.
Because they're quite segregated in small areas.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas the, well, I guess the Queensland, the North Australia species, since they've combined it, has such a range that I think it's gotten off. I think.
Yeah, right.
Has gotten off
the endangered
list.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, right. I mean, man, I feel like that at that point, people are just like desperate to just be like, I named a species. they like the beak size has grown a little bit. New species. Toenails weren't clipped. New species. Like I feel like there's an hidden agenda there.
It's all I don't know. The DNA apparently speaks for itself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. DNA in itself is very fascinating, and something that I am looking into amongst everything else that I'm like that I'm fascinated by DNA and how it breaks off and breaks down and adds and creates and hidden things. It's quite spectacular. Insane.
But I'm just playing this massive game of catch up really at the moment because like I said, I've been back for less than a year, and as much as my colleagues keep trying to
encourage you.
Encourage me. Yeah. Reassure me that nothing much has changed. I'm finding all these new studies on a weekly basis, being like, oh, well, this has changed.
Well, would you look at that?
Would you look at that?
Lying colleague. We won't say names. James? No, I don't know James. I don't know James.
I'm back. It's new.
You're back. There's lots on that. Well, with your job, and the many things that you have to learn and understand, is there a way that you structure your learning process? Because I know it's a bit of a weird way of saying it, but there's two ways that you can make it into a field of wildlife, say fauna spotting. You can either get through experience and who you know, or you can get through with what you know and certs and degrees that you've completed.
The formal study.
Correct. So the formal study. So with formal study and school, it gives you a structure with which to learn from.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not just kind of grasping at straws trying to figure out what to learn and when to learn. Which is how I feel sometimes.
Isn't that just life?
It is life. It is life. But school is helpful for that, or university. So I guess outside of your studies, such as the Taronga cert that you're doing, degree or cert?
I think it's just a course.
Just a course. As this course that you're going through with the Taronga Zoo.
There's CPD points and like continuous development points, but right.
So that it gives you some structure, but outside of that, how do you? So you're saying you're listening to or you're reading and finding a bunch of new information through the scientific papers and whatnot. Is there a way that you kind of structure how you learn and keep information as well? You're not just reading it and forgetting it.
I mean that is a great question. And honestly, no, there's no structure. It's all just a bit of chaos. It's usually inspired by you know, if someone has a question about something, whether that's at work or a friend or something you see on social media, about someone wondering something and just wanting to know the answer.
So,
you it's, know, it's
curiosity, personal curiosity is what drives
it. Wanting
that.
to know, wanting to be the person to be like, the next time that question comes up, being like, actually, I do have an answer for that.
Yeah.
Or I do know the reason that they do this. Or I do know that this is the reason you shouldn't feed that. Like, just personal curiosity.
So, personal curiosity and a gradual learning on the job.
Yeah, basically. It's, I'm very much a very big believer in, you know, lifelong learning. So, no one knows
the day
everything.
You die is the day you stop learning.
Yeah, exactly.
However that works, whichever way. The day you stop learning is the day you die. I think that's meant to be, but... Either way, it's true. If you die, you start learning.
Well, I guess none of us can definitively answer that.
Yeah. True. Yeah. Kind. Yeah. True. Yeah. You're dead. Sorry, Grandpa, who's under the ground 6 feet. I loved you. He ain't learning no more. But anyway, back to the job. So, science.
So, I'm currently, because I am a registered vet nurse, there are, like 20 CPD points a year that I have to,
accumulate
to keep my registration. It's a pretty achievable amount.
Yeah.
But it kind of ties in with the fact that I just like to learn.
Yeah, that's good.
So, even though I have that sort of obligation to be pushing myself and holding myself accountable to keep learning. I just like knowing. And honestly, there's so much out there. And there's so much that I don't know.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's so many cool facts. The thing with the three different subspecies of grey glider, my mind was blown. I was like, what?
Yeah.
There's three of them?
Yeah, and with the accumulation of information, whether it be just three subspecies of greater glider to five subspecies of red-tailed black cockatoo, to any genetic differences to to microbes, different diseases, bacterial infections, to how the impact, us as people affect our environment, both in the natural environment, we are able to get a better picture of how we should live and how we can live.
Definitely.
And what, I guess, has there been any direct impacts or effects in how you interact with people how you... live your life through with what you've experienced and what you know now? Has there been any effect? Has it impacted your life, I guess?
Definitely.
In a positive way.
Definitely. Mostly probably with all the awareness the one thing, the one thing that we can thank COVID for is that it kind of made the world stop and sit up and pay attention to how important mental health was. And, you know, there's been a lot of awareness about neurodivergence, for example, and just the different ways that people might operate or the different ways that people might think or behave and their reasonings behind it. It's sort of allowed a lot more compassion and just to be a lot more gentler and kinder, not just to myself, for the weird things that I do, and the crazy stuff that, you know, I'm like, why did I do that? Why did I react that way?
Why can't I be normal?
Why can't I be normal?
Normal is overrated.
Normal's boring. Also, who's normal these days? It's a bit more of a deeper understanding of people and just how they operate. Mm. But, you know, I find behavior in general fascinating. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been delving a lot into animal behavior lately as well, and particularly companion birds, parrots, our citizens, for example. Like, that's a big area that means a lot to me, I guess. And I feel like I'm just, that's kind of been my hyperfixation for the last year since I've delved back into the animal world, and also sort of motivated by the fact that I've just recently taken my parrots back. They used to live with my parents,
right,
because
right.
they lived on like a semi-rural property. They lived on 2.5 acres, and then they downsized to.
It's a lot more acreage than I own.
Yeah, well, they downsized from zero yet so far.
Yes, yes.
they went from a 2.5 acre property to a townhouse.
It's truth, what a downsize.
So I took my animals back.
yeah.
And because I had previously been living in an outdoor aviary.
Mm-hmm.
And now that they're sort of in my face every day, sort of reminded about how important animal behavior is, especially because, you know.
And how to understand it.
And how to understand it. Yeah, no, definitely. Because, you know, as humans, as owners, we control basically their entire environment.
Yes.
And
100%.
Definitely. Like, we control their diet, their mm-hmm. their lighting,
mm-hmm.
Especially if they're indoors. If they're mm-hmm. outdoors, obviously,
their mental health.
Their mental
like,
health.
Like, their neuro, what is it? That physical touch. I don't know what I'm saying. There's a thing, there's a name.
I think that's one of the love languages.
Yeah, that's one of the five love languages. My bad. I was became a bird.
Hey, birds have their love languages.
Yes, yeah, and they tell you to get stuffed like that cockatoo on Instagram and YouTube.
Which one's that?
The one that swears.
The cockatoo. Which one?
Okay, there's a cockatoo that says F off.
Is it Eric?
I don't.
Eric the Corolla?
Oh, damn, there's more? Some badass owners out here just like telling your parrot to swear. Goodness gracious.
Well, yeah, see the point. Oh. Look, I love swearing parrots, to be totally honest.
They are funny.
Yeah, I love parrots that can talk. But having said that, you do have to kind of take into context. And this is a thing that I love about behavior when it comes to our companion animal, companion birds, sorry.
Yep, specifically, yeah.
Is that, you know, there's a lot of things that have to be taken in context.
Yep.
And, you know, sometimes the cute things that are cute, that we think are cute, are actually not that cute. So, for example, a bird that's...
I don't think babies are cute.
Me neither!
Sometimes.
I'm not a baby person.
No, there's very, very rarely will I... I know we're talking about birds, so we just jumped to babies. But, like, I got this one, like, niece and a half, 0.2. I don't know how the family connection works.
Okay, yep.
Point being, she's great. But and she was real cool baby, you were cute baby. But point being, yeah, that's the only thing I don't find cute. But anyway, birds.
I mean, you've seen the sticker on the back of my car, right?
Maybe not.
Make love, not babies.
Right. Yes, that one. Yeah, I remember now. But parrots and
birds.
Loving.
Yeah, parrots. yeah, you know the cute things that they do that are cute until.
Then it
not.
Becomes destructive.
Until they're not.
Right,
right.
Like puppies when they chew and bite you and then they start eating your furniture.
Puppies and their sharp teeth.
Violence.
It's sort of their misunderstood behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you see those videos on YouTube or Instagram or TikTok, whatever
yep.
social media platform you might see them on. And you might think that it's funny because it's a bird swearing its head off or it's a parrot in the middle of a vet clinic that's laughing like a maniac. Like, and it's just a really weird sound coming from a bird and you might think, oh, that's hilarious. But everything, a lot of things with animals is contextual and birds will generally learn to speak when they're at a heightened sense, a heightened state.
Yeah,
that
right.
doesn't mean that it's a good heightened state.
Yeah, it sounds like some sort of like some ultra mental brain thing. And this parrot's becoming a god. And
dude, they're intense.
It sounds like Hinduism.
Birds, they're intense. So just because a bird is laughing in the middle of a clinic and humans might recognize laughter
yeah.
as a good thing
yeah.
or, you know, yeah, just mm-hmm. something funny,
mm.
it doesn't mean it's that way for the bird.
Right.
It learned it at a heightened state. It might have learned it at
out
a negative.
Stress. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It
right.
might have learned it at a negative heightened state.
Yeah,
so
right.
you've
okay.
got to really take in the environment.
Yeah.
So if an animal is going absolutely nuts in yeah. the middle of a vet clinic, which is a very notorious high stress situation.
Mm-hmm. Sounds, noises, smells.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you look at the rest of it, like with birds, they can control the size of their pupils, for example. Mm. So sometimes shining a light in their eyes doesn't really, it's not really accurately portrayed of their, I'm probably
emotional
getting this
story.
Wrong, I do apologize, vets, but like their retina, the corneal function.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of their light response, yeah, light response. So it's an action called pinning.
Mm-hmm.
it's really difficult to see in some cockatoo species because
right.
their eyes are really, really dark that mm-hmm. you can't really make out the difference between
the pupil,
the iris,
the
and the pupil. Yeah, exactly. But in some other species, like Indian ringnecks or Alexandrians, for example, mm-hmm. I don't personally have experience with macaws, but you can any species that you can see the contrast between, you'll see their pupils get like sort of constrict and dilate and
mm-hmm.
it kind of flashes at
yep.
you.
Okay.
And you know that's a really heightened state.
Yeah, right.
And if a bird's doing that
yeah.
at you,
yeah.
depending on the context, it
right.
might be really happy.
Right.
Or that's anthropomorphism. It might be it might be a good excitement
yeah,
or
yeah, yeah.
a bad excitement.
Yeah.
So if it's trying a new food, it's probably, or its favorite food, it could be a good excitement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if it's flashing its eyes and it's eating a piece of grape and it's, you know, a fruit-eating species,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or frugivore, it's
yep.
probably a treat. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
But if you've just stood in front of its cage, you've opened it up and stuck your hand in to try and get it to step up, and it's flashing its eyes at you while it's got its beak open...
Not but a
close
good thing.
The cage.
Yeah.
not,
I'm having some
thing.
Like whack ass cartoon like ideas just bringing. Bloop, 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 like.
So that's the thing that I absolutely
so can you
love.
Can see it pretty clearly just on just like just by looking at them, or you have to shine that torch on them.
No, you can see it. It depends on the species.
Yeah, and how big it is. Like you're seeing a little
so,
finch. I can't even see his eyeballs.
Well, some of our cockatoo species.
Yeah, just bigger birds in general.
Not necessarily. It's
okay.
just, it's the color of their eye.
Mm-hmm.
So some cockatoo species have really dark eyes. So it's not necessarily like the size of the eye. It's just that their eye is naturally dark.
Right.
You know, it's a little bit easier to tell in some galah species, rose-breasted
mm-hmm.
cockatoo species. It's, you know, there's, with a fairly high but not 100% accuracy, you can sort of tell the difference between like the males and the females, because the females are kind of known for having a lighter colored eye as opposed to the males that have a very dark colored eye.
Mm.
So you can't see that size difference.
Right.
But yeah, like in Alexandrians and that sort of thing, you can definitely tell.
Right.
They're flashing.
Very
at you.
Interesting. Eyeballs that flash. Yeah, like. Yeah, mad cartoony image in my brain, but I can't physically express that because it's not possible to see my brain thoughts. Well, talking about animal stress and their behavior, how do you handle in your job as a vet nurse in a wildlife hospital? how do you handle when everything is intense? There's lots of pressure, lots of animals coming in for whatever reason that may be. How do you handle the pressure and figure out what to do next? How do you order of triage, I guess, I think could be a word.
Specifically triage or pressure in?
Triage and then how you also handle that mentally and emotionally.
See, it's sort of... triaging and anything to do with animal priority, anything to do with the animals themselves, even if it's high stress, I find it much more easier to deal with and sort of break down, compartmentalize, right, if you will,
mm-hmm,
compared to, you know, being given a heads up that there's a tour group about to come through the hospital and there's going to be people around. You just kind of do it.
Yeah.
I guess.
There's no order. Like, say you have 10 animals coming in at once. Just there's been a mass car accident and the animals are driving. I don't know.
Okay. So how do I triage as opposed to how do I deal with the stress from triage?
Yeah. Well, Yes. Yeah. So like, how do you prioritize what animals to take care of first?
Maybe, oh, okay.
That was probably
triage,
a much better way of putting it.
Okay. Yeah.
And then how you handle, the pressure in that moment. You could even take it a step further. Do you work out the building up of stress outside of work by, I don't know, punching walls? You don't have to admit to that.
Violence against buildings. Australia says no.
There's gonna be a government statement out. Don't punch buildings.
We do not condone violence
towards buildings.
towards anything.
Yeah. Okay.
Points. Look, it's a great question. There's about maybe two or three questions in that.
Yes. So first one being how do you prioritize?
Okay. Yeah. So we have. I guess you could sort of call it, I was going to say a traffic light system, but there's no yellow. It's
orange.
Blue, orange is one. Oh. Blue, orange, and red.
Okay.
There is a green as well, but.
Ooh, okay, there's four.
Sometimes we also combine some. Okay. So we have the euthanasias.
Mm-hmm.
Which are, you know, either they're a non-native or introduced species.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Which is a straight-out euthanasia, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, with just government legislation, mm-hmm, and permitting, that sort of thing.
Yep.
You know, you're not legally allowed to rehabilitate or keep, mm-hmm, it, and you're, mm-hmm, also not legally allowed to release it, mm-hmm, so...
Look, which makes sense. The impact on our environment... Take, for example, toads, although not liked much really by people, they still have feelings and all that sort of thing. We should still care for them.
They kind of, they're starting to serve more of a purpose these days since, you know, birds like ibis, mm, have been documented.
Oh, wait, so ibis flip them as well?
Yeah. No, not only do they flip them, they wash them.
Oh, dead set.
Frick,
I only thought it was toads. Not toads, that's what we're talking about. I thought it wasn't. I know there's crows.
Mm-hmm.
Them dogs flip them over.
Corvids,
And then the corvid family in general. Okay, corvids, okay, that's good. So we got more than just crows, good. And then keelbacks, them blooming awesome snakes. And so now ibis. Them bin chickens are solving Australia's cane toad problem one wash at a time.
Have you heard what they do? It's sort of diabolical genius.
Oh, okay.
So they stress the animal out and make it release its toxins,
okay,
like as a defense mechanism, and then they wash it to wash off all the toxins.
Yeah.
And then they eat it.
Dead set.
Yeah.
Frick. Damn. Hey, bin chickens, them smart. Them birds be smart. Washing toads.
They're one of my favorite patients as well.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, you can restrain them just by holding, just they're not their neck, just like their beak. Then they can't do anything. There's so much handhold.
They're harder to restrain than you probably think. They like to twist a lot. They're just this writhing bird. But they're one of my favorite patients because
tried catching one once.
Did it need to be caught?
No.
Okay. Oh dear.
I was like 15.
Oh, okay. Did they recently?
No, I was like 15. I was like, I just wanted to catch everything. And that's my goal. That was my goal. If I can catch it, then to say I caught it freaking dope. And it started making the horrendous noise.
Yeah.
And I freaked out. I was like, whoa, okay, freak. It's like a car alarm for a bird.
That's like trying to force feed some channel bills and they're just sounding like a banshee. Like, it's insane.
Going off. But yeah, yeah, so I tried catching one and then I released it very quickly.
I bet.
I was at Sunnybank. Not Sunnybank.
Southbank?
Southbank, yeah. I was at Southbank, yeah. Yeah. I caught it between a fence and a tree. Oh, God. Yeah. And then I let go of it between a fence and a tree.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But yeah, so Bin Chicken's favorite patient.
Yeah, well, usually because they have such a quick turnaround time as far as if they're going to improve, because usually if they come in, it's because of botulism.
Botulism.
It's I'm going to apologize in advance to any vets listening out there. If I may muck this up, I am a nurse. I nurse the animal. I don't diagnose.
I don't vet the animal. I nurse it.
It's a bacterium,
mm-hmm.
and it's in a lot of, stagnant, stale water.
Oh, sweet. They're home.
They are a waiter bird. When people throw food into water, like right. thinking that, I'll feed the duck some bread.
Yeah, yeah.
So it causes a paralysis. So a lot of the times when they come in suffering from botulism or a toxicity, basically, it's a toxicity. They can't often stand.
Mm.
They can't fly.
Right.
They just kind of.
So
they're just there on the ground.
So a bacteria attacks its muscular system or its neuro system.
Above my pay grade.
Not sure. Okay. the outcome, just not the process to the outcome. Okay. Hey, at least we know an outcome. Okay.
It's like try asking a vet how to set up a fluid line. They probably couldn't. But
yeah. Okay. So we got strengths and weaknesses on both sides of the field.
Effort.
Yeah.
Team
okay.
Effort.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a team effort. All right.
But yeah, they usually recover. Pop them on a IV IV line. If they're not eating, tube feed them. But usually their turnaround time is, as far as improvement goes, is literally between 24 and 48 hours that they start to improve, be able to stand, and just seeing that progression to a bird that comes in that can't stand to a bird that's capable of flight within. Some of them are like a 3-day period, 3-4-day period. Mm. It's pretty amazing, honestly. It's a really good feeling. So as far as that's concerned, they're one of my favorite patients because they're just easy patients.
Yeah, right. Just
recover quickly with
supportive
care. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Mm. Yeah. Well, with all this knowledge and experience that you've had, and I guess into where you are today, is there who what, when, where, why, all the five basic questions. I think we touched on it last time we had you on, why you kind of got into it. You grew up around animals. You had your domestic dog at home when you were younger.
And my duck.
And
duck plays a big part.
Your duck plays a big part.
Yeah.
Why does it play a big part into who you are now? Like this 33-year-old Sampy, what impact has this duck had on you?
His name was Whistles. I say was because he passed away this year.
Oh, okay. Oh, he's been around for a while.
He has. Yeah. He was, I think, he was about 10, I think, without, stopping to do all the math in my head.
Yeah.
I sort of rescued him from a produce store. He was missing a lot of his...
From a produce store?
From a produce store.
Was he wrapped up in, to sell as edible?
No. Like a one of those farm tractor produce
right.
stores.
Ah, cool.
Yeah.
I was thinking, did Woolworths confuse a duck for a chicken? And he was on the heating rack with all the other chickens.
I would actually arguably say that he was my first patient.
Right, okay.
My childhood dog was probably one of my earlier ones. You hear a lot of people who can't afford vet bills, so they put the dog down. But,
yes.
I I got a second job when I realized that my dog was going to start needing more vet trips, started getting older. So,
yeah, right on.
But no, Whistles, my rescue dog. He was a Muscovy, Muscovy Jerk. So a lot of people might know them as sort of, for lack of a better word, like the ugly ducklings. I think they're gorgeous. They have the red face mask. They originate from South America. A lot of people dump them because they get them as ducklings before they develop the face mask.
Oh, then they turn ugly. Aww.
And then they start developing them and then they get big, especially
get
the drakes because
they're out of the family. No well, one loves you.
The males get big. I mean, you've got a Muscovy.
Yeah. His name's Duck.
His name's Duck?
Pretty sure his name's Duck.
You're pretty sure?
Yeah, I didn't name him. Fam did. Pretty sure it's Duck.
Oh, that's...
It's either Duck or Duck Duck. One of the two.
I love that. Is his last name Goose?
I have no idea. I doubt it, but it'd be funny. Might as well be by the time it's Duck Duck.
I love that. Muscovies are my favorite.
So Whistles. But
I might be slightly biased.
Yes.
Yeah, Whistles. I saw him at a produce store. I tried to report him. Well, not him. I tried to report the company for cruelty. There was some things going on there it wasn't ideal. Ducks really need deep enough of a water dish so that they can. Well, I mean, yes, but also that they can flush out their nares.
Mm.
Some people might. Argue on the pronunciation of that, where it's Neres or Nares, but I'm saying Nares. It's Nares.
What is Nares? Just quickly.
Their nostrils,
right?
Basically, like
okay. Right.
The nostrils. Yeah, just because of the way that they eat, they're a filter feeder.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are a filter feeder. Some of the wood ducks they do graze, but essentially they need water deep enough so that they can. Put their entire beak, their entire bill into the water and flush it out and that sort of stuff. And his water was...
Less than ideal.
Like less than a centimeter. So, yeah.
That's not much.
It's not.
It's
because
like
someone
sneezed.
yeah, exactly. A lot. Yeah. A lot. He was housed with a bunch of pullets or like young chickens who bullied him. He didn't really...
this really is the ugly duckling story.
Yeah, whether he wasn't fed appropriately, so he didn't have the strength to stand or support his weight, but he couldn't walk. So eventually, it was a whole fiasco. Anyway, eventually I managed to get him off their hands, and you know he cost me about $1,000 worth in vet bills in the first month of having him.
What
had
a duck.
Surgery, yeah, had
gold plated teeth,
no teeth. but yeah, he had a few things wrong with him, I'm doing a lot of apologizing to vets in this episode, but. Aspergillosis?
Asperges.
Not Asperges. look.
Okay, what
I
is
nurse
it?
The patient, how not, about what? Not the disease.
how about what is it? Don't say what it isn't. What is it instead of the name?
He had a respiratory infection, that's why I called him Whistles, because he couldn't breathe properly without making a sound.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, through my wanting to report him... to an authority figure, I realized that there were volunteer opportunities as well in the realm of, animal care and wildlife and that sort of thing. So, you know, I clicked that volunteer now button and read all the info and ended up volunteering there. And I think it was about six, seven months later, I had a job.
Yes. Oh,
so
sweet.
The entire reason that I... sort of started down this pathway was because of Whistles.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And I don't know if I'd either be working the job that I am now without him being in my life.
Right. That's interesting. And I mean, it's sad that he's passed now. This is past year too.
I still have his body. look on your face. I'm getting him taxidermied.
Oh, okay, yeah. Right. Okay, I just saw a prank video yesterday of this guy that's like, he was all like artist up on his fingers and he was lying in the fridge and they called this fridge repairman out and acted like there's a dead guy in the freezer. Oh, and God. So I was just like, had that in my brain. Yeah. It's like, oh, you have family or friends over for dinner and they open up the freezer and there's a duck just...
Oh, no.
It's like, ah.
No, because he meant so much to me and because he represented, you know,
the
why.
Beginning of where you are.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, the whole why. He is the why.
Mm.
Or he's the start of the why.
Mm.
Yeah, it didn't feel right to... just bury, oh, well, especially because I'm in a rental, so maybe I didn't want to bury
future
him.
Future owners, just people coming through, just want to, I'm going to plant an apple tree with my kid. What is this?
Great fertilizer. I didn't want to bury him. It didn't feel right to cremate him. So I wanted him as a daily reminder in his sort of full form.
Yeah.
So I'm on a
yeah.
No, not just a foot. So I'm on a wait list. There's a wait list.
For taxidermied animals.
Yeah. For the good taxidermists. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, for quality.
Yeah, so hopefully, fingers crossed, next year I'm getting him taxidermied.
Frozen right now he is.
He's frozen right now. Cryo frozen. In my work freezer.
Work freezer?
with a massive sign on him.
Saying, do not
discard.
Here for a year and a half only.
I'm looking into chest freezers, but I have a very particular area of the house where it needs to be.
It's about the size of a human body, too.
Shh, don't tell people that.
Ducks and something else. You'll find out when you find out. Okay, so your duck has had a big impact on you, Whistles.
Yes.
In regards to other people that have had an impact on you.
Yes.
Who do you look up to and who has had a big impact on who you are today?
See, those are two questions with two different answers and I look up to everybody because I'm freaking short.
It's true. That is true. That is true. Setting up the mic was a challenge.
It took like about 20 minutes.
Yes,
to set up the mic.
Yes, the first time.
Who do I look up to? Honestly, I work with some... I currently work with and I have previously worked with a lot of amazing people, incredibly intelligent, amazing skill sets, just wonderful, wonderful people that have achieved a lot in their respective careers, but also just some really caring, patient, loving people.
Mm.
So honestly, as sappy as that might sound, I actually look up to everybody I work with.
Yeah, that's yeah. It's, if it's not sappy, if it's true, yeah. Kind of, but yeah, it's not. Yeah.
Including some people that have left, that, you know, there's some down in Canberra that are amazing that I've sort of kept in touch with, here and there, mm-hmm. and, you know, just send the odd memes to. Memes are love language these days.
Yeah.
You don't even have to talk. You just send memes to each other.
That's how it works these days.
I think so.
I don't meme.
You don't meme?
I don't meme. I don't have people to meme to. I'm just like.
I'll send you a meme
day
later.
Day in, day out, snakes. It's just wake up, snakes. Go to sleep.
Snakes.
Still snakes. Like, I have nightmares sometimes. It's that I missed the job. It's great.
Nightmares and dreams.
Yeah. I'm full on with these snakes. But yeah, sorry.
No, that's right.
People you look up to.
Yeah, so I look up to everybody that I work with, and a lot of people that are in the industry that I haven't yet worked with,
yes.
But I've heard of.
Yeah.
As well. The Australian wildlife industry, as far as, you know, the veterinary field is quite small.
Yeah.
So there's names get around and there's a lot of people I'd love to meet and interact with maybe one day.
Yeah.
As far as who's had the biggest influence.
Yes.
She's one of my closest friends. She was the maid of honor at my wedding even. This amazing person called Jenny Ann. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to cry. I love her so much. I met her when I was a volunteer and she was working as a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And When she heard of my interest about learning more and my love of learning and wanting to do more, she encouraged me to start volunteering. I was originally volunteering as a receptionist, receptionist volunteer for the Wildlife Hospital. She encouraged me actively to start volunteering in the wards as well, being a ward support, which I did. And yeah, so 6 months after that is when I got hired.
For the job.
When you click with everyone as well, it sort of helps.
Definitely.
And yeah, we became good friends. She's got a world of knowledge as far as the companion birds go as well. She's sort of, you know, one of my mentors.
Same field of interest.
Same field of interest. She's helped me a lot previously, both professionally, as far as like knowledge and skill sets and that sort of stuff, but also personally as well. Cause obviously, she's, you know, she was my maid of honor at my wedding. So
yeah,
she has,
big stand in your life.
Very much so. And after I left, you know, she stayed with the company. She stayed on, and when she found out, when I told her, because we would still meet up, obviously, and kept in contact. When I told her that I was thinking about finding a new job, because I'd just sort of hit that point with my previous one and wanted to move on, something closer, she was sort of angling to be like, would you ever consider coming back? I was like, oh, look, maybe, maybe. And then I get this random message from her one morning being like, how's the job hunt coming? Okay, well, I responded to her, you know, like, honestly, I did have an interview lined up. I can't remember if it was either coming up or I'd already had it.
Yeah.
But she basically completely ignored what I told her and continued with, because I was having a chat to my manager. And if you wanted to meet her, you just have to send her an email and attach your resume. So after, you know, maybe 48 hours of deliberating with my partners and being like, oh, should I do this? You know, do you remember what it was like when I was there last time? But I'd grown a lot as a person and so as a company, and I thought, what the hell? I really miss the animals. I always miss the animals. It is a major passion of mine. So I went ahead and reached out, and here I am. And I'm back, and I'm working with Jenny again. She's one of the most just supportive, loving, caring, wonderful people that you'll ever meet in your life. I have a lot of time for her.
Does she ever work out front as well? Just seeing if I've met her, maybe.
Or like reception? Potentially.
Is she a nurse or vet?
She's a nurse. I say potentially because we do have a triage shift position,
right,
which does work sort of in tandem between the clinic and the vets, as well as reception and answering the phones. And then throughout the wards, sometimes trying to coordinate carers and that sort of stuff. They're sort of everywhere.
maybe so.
So potentially.
Maybe. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, it sounds like her willingness to be of help has obviously impacted you positively and led to where you are today.
She's one of my favorite bird nerds.
I was listening to that podcast you're talking to about. And about pigeons. It was very interesting pigeon facts.
With Caesar and Felicity.
Yeah, very interesting pigeon facts, and your bird people.
Yeah, they're pretty great people.
Yeah, very, very.
I work with some awesome people. I quite like my team.
Yeah, well, that's good. Team uniformity. Which actually, talking about team, is I want to do the good or not question. What, I don't even know what I called them yet. yay or nay? Yay or nay?
Yay or nay?
Yeah, it was overrated or underrated. That's the word.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yep. Because that kind of also is speaking about them. So.
Yes.
Are you ready for some questions? Overrated or underrated?
I guess I told you before, I don't think very well on the fly. Sweet. But we'll try.
We have no option but to.
Cool.
Fantastic.
Let's do it.
Sorry. Not sorry. Okay. Overrated, underrated. Specializing in a specific area of vet nursing.
Underrated.
Underrated. How come?
I don't think people realize that when they get into vet nursing that there are so many scopes to it. So definitely underrated because I don't think people think about it.
Yeah. There's a vast amount people don't realize about.
Yeah. Some people sort of think if you're a vet nurse, that's sort of it. Like, you know, you specialize vet nurse. Okay. So you play with dogs and cats all day. It's like, well, no, I don't. It's not what I do. And my, you know, specialty is in avian behavior. Yeah. So there are definitely different fields of interest to get into.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So very much underrated.
All right. Well, okay. Well, next, overrated, underrated, effective communication skills within a team or ward.
Underrated. Of course. That's
good. I'm glad you like communication.
Yeah, well, there's so many conflicts that can be easily avoided just through talking, communication.
Okay, I'm glad you're saying, because I feel like communication is always something that's spoken about. It's like, in relationships or any other romantic or not, it's about, you know, communicate, it's really good for you, and but then no one actually communicates. So it's like,
more specifically, effective communication.
Yes, effective communication.
Definitely a difference.
Good point to make. Number three, overrated, underrated, washing hands before and after a procedure.
Underrated.
Sweet. That's good. It's good. Good response. Okay. Overrated, underrated.
And scrubbing under your nails.
Yeah, it's essential. That's another thing COVID taught us, supposedly, is that be healthier. It'd be better cleanliness.
Hygiene.
Yes, that's the word. Yeah. Overrated, underrated. Licking an echidna to find out if it has a fungal infection.
Part of me wants to say underrated, but I'm going to go with overrated.
Good stuff.
Definitely better diagnostic.
Fantastic. Glad we can agree on that. That's good. Overrated, underrated. Final one. Meeting up with coworkers after hours.
Underrated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, underrated. Mm-hmm. There's this every now and again when, you know, the timing is right and everyone has their schedules free. Sometimes we like to go to there's a local pub.
Mm-hmm.
Down the road, it's literally a 2-minute drive from work.
Oh, that's good.
And every now and again, we go there for just one drink. We like to stay safe because we're all driving.
We're non-alcoholics in this joint, wherever this joint may be.
It's, you know, one drink over the course of an hour or an hour and a half. All legal. But I do strongly believe that, you know, you don't necessarily... You don't need to like someone in order to get your job done.
Yeah.
But it makes it a hell of a lot easier.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely agreed with that one. I mean, I work by myself and I love myself. Joking. I mean, I'm in the middle. I'm reasonable.
JK, but also not really.
Yeah. It's like, if you don't love yourself, you hate yourself. I was like, it's way too intense. No.
I'm all about self-love.
Yeah. Exactly. What I was saying, because I do work with myself and I was just wondering, if you guys do. And so that's fantastic that you do. And obviously it helps with unit cohesion.
Definitely, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you guys are able to, I guess, work more smoothly. There's less, irks within the team, would you say? Or at least there's more of an ability to overcome and overlook irks between the team members.
Not necessarily overlook.
They're
that
just
might be
more
the
straightforward and be like, oi, you suck at this, get better.
I guess because there's a level of comfort there that you would have with a friend as opposed to someone that you've never worked with before. Like, it's a lot easier to go up to a friend and be like, hey, just checking, did you mean this? Mm-hmm. Or, hey, did you forget this? Yep. Or did you mean to do this, et cetera. Like, it's easier to check in with a friend as opposed to someone that you don't really have any history or any relationship with other than just seeing them at work and not making small talk or about your lives, or if you don't know anything about them, or it's, you know, I'm not saying it can't be done, but it makes it a lot easier. And just, it makes the workplace nicer. If you can work with your friends or if you can turn your colleagues into friends,
even better.
It's great.
Has there been any situations, has there been an instance that you can think of now where that has occurred, where you've been able to work a situation out a lot smoother, a lot better than you would say if you weren't on a more of a friendly playing field?
Oh, look, there's a potential for it every day. You know, it's quite an emotionally loaded industry.
Okay.
You know, just the veterinary sphere is quite emotionally loaded.
Right, and that would be because.
Because of the amount of trauma that you see as well. Like, you know, a lot of people think that the job is sort of, they have this, they seem to have this perspective that, oh, you're a vet nurse, oh, you work with wildlife and avian exotics. It's so, so cute. And nice, like they might, clouds. They might see the good photos, like, you know, in social media.
Yeah.
That's
pump up.
Oh, geez. That, it's a highlight reel.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely. I don't always catch snakes.
Sometimes you turn up and it's the wrong
It's the wrong house. Yeah,
and I was playing darts on some stranger's board.
Straight up, yeah. Look, I'm just gonna say that today I may have played darts on a random's front porch because it was there, and I was just, turns out it was like an apartment building house, so it wasn't just actually a house. There was just a bunch side by side, and just so happened to be a dartboard out front. So,
and you were told.
Told the wrong address, so I did. I just played darts, just momentarily while I waited on the phone for an answer, and then like, oh yeah, it's six houses incorrect.
So yeah, it's an emotionally charged industry, and it's not all, you know,
sunshine
getting to cuddle a koala who are not very cuddly. I'm just going to put that out there. I do not recommend.
But you don't cuddle a wombat.
Well, I mean, it was facing away from me, so really I was the big spoon to a wombat.
Definitely did not think about it like that until just then.
And it's really weird because we were being told to just support its upper body and let its lower body just hang, and it felt more at ease that way.
Yeah.
But with literally every single other animal, we're
not
told,
to do that.
Yeah, exactly. We're told to support the rear end. So even though... you know, he was giving a demonstration to a bunch of experienced wildlife vet nurses. He kept repeating himself, like, no, let the hand fall. It's fine. It's okay.
Sorry that I care.
I'm just trying to support the animal.
Problems in cuddling a wombat. But yeah, so people don't realize.
They don't see the, and I'm just going to give a, you know, a content warning, CW, to this part here. But
I know what CW means.
CW, content warning.
Oh, sorry.
So if you're a bit squeamish, maybe turn the volume down just for a second. But, you know, they don't see the trauma. They don't see the broken legs. They don't see the bones sticking out of the body. They don't see the abscesses that have popped and are fly blown and maggots crawling around in the wound while the animal is still very much alive. They don't see the dermatitis that's eaten away half of a possum's face while the animal is still alive. They don't see that side of things.
Yep.
They don't see the car strikes. They don't see... you know, the loss of habitat, impact sort of thing.
Yeah.
We do.
Yeah.
We see it on a daily basis. It's our job. Mm. So, you know, it's all well and good to be like, oh, your job is all sunshine and animals and rainbows. It's not, man. It's really not. It's a hard industry to work in. And it takes a certain sort of person. And you know what?
Right.
Most of us probably cry.
Probably cry. Most of us.
But we
sound specifically general.
We compartmentalize. You know, we'll at the time it's happening that we're seeing, you know, the shell fracture on the turtle that's just being hit by a car and it's, you know, gone into its celiac cavity. We deal with it on the spot. We worry about it later. And then we go home and we're like, man,
what a day.
So, red or white wine?
Yeah, damn.
Where's the cider at? Let's put some stupid TV on.
Change the vibe. Right.
And that's how you break down.
That's how you calm down.
Yeah.
And de-stress after a day.
De-stress. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I get home from work and don't ask me within the first 20 minutes, oh, how was your day?
Right.
I need to get home. I need to have a shower.
Right.
And I need about 10, 15, 20 minutes to just process.
Right.
And then after that, yeah, all peachy keen.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Come at me.
Yeah.
There's definitely a wind down process.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so when you're in that sort of environment faced with these really confronting things, you know, it's to be working with your friends, to be working with a really supportive group that actually check in on you. Like, oh, hey, it's been really busy today. Are you okay? You doing all right? Is there anything I can help with? Means a lot.
Yeah.
Really does.
Yeah. And that's where hanging out, I guess, and then that's where hanging out with coworkers after work as well, as not just on work, building that connection.
Yeah.
Helps to support each other in the job as well.
Yeah,
as outside the job.
We're all in it together.
Yeah. That's a very unique job to have in comparison to working at Woolies or Domino's.
Which probably comes with its own set of...
It does. Yeah. It does. Each job does have its unique set of challenges. And it's been great that you've opened up the eyes of myself and the listeners to how your job operates. And a little bit about yourself and how you've gotten to where you are today, because it is in the small things that we do in our day-to-day life and also from our past that can have the greatest impact on others, such as your friend speaking to you and encouraging you and checking up on you and be like, hey, what about this job? You want to come back?
I swear she lined me up.
It sounds like she did. It sounds like she waited 6 months to pounce, or however long it was.
Oh, look, I'm not mad.
Yeah. You've gotten to where you are. We're gonna finish the episode on this time. Thank you very much, Sampi, again for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with
Thanks for having me.
Getting to know a little bit more about you, and not just knowing you through the automotive store that I met you at. Didn't talk about Jimmy's, but that's totally fine with me because Jimmy's are cool as in itself. They don't need explanation. But thank you very much for listening. If you've learned anything, fantastic. If you'd like to know any more, send me a message. And if Sampi wants people to follow her, I'll put her details underneath and go from there. But until next time, guys, have a good one. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you would like more information, head over to www.thebigsmall.au. And make sure to subscribe as to never miss a future episode. And I look forward to seeing you in the next one.